I want to welcome all of you back to Cal Poly. I have seen many faces over the on the campus during the summer. I didn't get away very much myself, but I do know some of you went out fishing and hunting. And in fact, some of them helped fill my larder at home when they came back after the success. I want to also particularly welcome all the new faculty members and all the new staff members here at Cal Poly. As you probably know, it's my last year at Cal Poly. I don't know whether they're having a run on getting rid of presidents all over the state. I just got a notice, a letter from one this morning saying he's retiring at the end of this year. That makes four of us that'll be leaving or be looking for new presidents among the state colleges. Anyhow, it's with mixed feelings I come before you today. I've been here for almost a third of a century. It's a time, I think, to look back and see if my goals have been accomplished. And in regard to the future, I can only hope for the best. Even if there was no age limit and I could remain as your president, I doubt it would be possible to give the proper leadership to our three campuses with their rapid growth and increasing problems. On the other hand, I don't think that many individuals have had the great opportunities that I have had and the many varied experiences that went along with the development of this wonderful college. It has taken practically every minute of my life for many years, but they've been very exciting years. There have been many problems to solve, enemies to outmaneuver, and many kinds of personal contacts and relationships. We've had some very big land deals. And at least three occasions, we were on the brink of closure when our funds were just about run out or someone tried to take them away from us in the legislature. At times, we had too few students to justify the number of faculty and staff that we had on the campus. We had to use every kind of a recruitment device to keep going. We had to do some real selling to survive and get over some of our rocky and bad spots that we went through. We had to keep in close touch continuously with the legislature and, of course, our state administration, the State Department of Education, and now the State Board of Trustees. And remember, the members of these bodies have been changing from year to year, and we've had to keep them informed and keep them interested in what we were trying to do. The experiences we had in acquiring the Boreas and the Kellogg campuses, and acquiring the Rassi Loan Fund, the Collins Loan Fund, and other scholarship and loan funds were most interesting and educational. A state has purchased for us thousands of acres of land worth millions of dollars, and each transaction was difficult, but we were successful. To get the state share of the horse race funds year after year when everyone else seemed to want them more than we did was a big story in itself. But without this assistance, we've never been able to have the success that we've had. Our Cal Poly Foundation has a long and rocky history, but has been a lifesaver to our total program. The success we had in getting close to $100 million in buildings on our San Luis Obispo and Kellogg campuses wasn't easy. These are some of the material things that make up the background of Cal Poly, especially since 1931. It would take hours to go into detail even on one or two of the items I mentioned, and they're all very interesting. In fact, several persons have suggested that books be written about this part of our history. This gives you some idea of the exciting and full life I've had for at least this last century, third of a century. As most of you know, Cal Poly started as a state polytechnic high school in 1901. It became a junior college in 1927. At first, it was administered by a local board appointed by the governor. And in 1921, it became a part of the State Department of Education. In 1929, it ran into difficulty with the legislature, and a move was made to close it. And the first step they took was to abolish girls from the campus. At that time, I was chief of the Bureau of Agricultural Education, and I had problems in getting trained agricultural teachers and had no assistance in carrying out the functions of the future farmers of America which was my responsibility. We saw an opportunity of utilizing the facilities at Cal Poly, and with a little persuasion, got the State Board of Education to turn the school over to the Bureau of Agricultural Education. This took place in 1931. For 2 years, we struggled to justify this transfer. First, we did went out and hired an outstanding faculty, and you know them. I believe only one of them is with us today. First, I got J.I. Thompson, who'd been a teacher of mine up at Davis and who was then running the Straylock Farms. I got Chester McCorkle, who had been a student of mine at Gilroy High School when I taught there and who was teaching up at Red Bluff. Got George Cooper from up in Oregon. Got Al Hollenberg from Watsonville. We got Ted Howes. Brought in Vard Shepard. You may see Carl Beck sitting down here in the audience came at that time. George Drum and some of the others. We had at that time on the campus Elgin Knott, Vern Meacham, Miss Margaret Chase, Marty Martinson, Pop Smith, Dr. Wilder, and several others. During the years 1931 to 33, the program was greatly improved. But our enemies were working against us during those 2 years. I lived in Sacramento during that time, and under my visits here, I used to stay over here at Heron Hall. I came down as often as I possibly could. At the instigation of the University of California, the legislature appropriated funds for a study of higher education in 1931. This study was made under what was known as a Suzzolo Committee. The committee recommended the abolishment of Cal Poly. This was the third time this recommendation had been made since its founding. In 1933, there are 6 bills in the legislature calling for the closing of Cal Poly. With the study we had made for the usage of Cal Poly, and I presented to the State Board of Education, including a projected Cal Poly program, I presented this program to the Ways and Means Committee of the State Assembly of the legislature, and I offered to run Cal Poly at the cost of $75,000 a year. Now, this was a cut in annual budget from $300,000, and this deal was accepted by the legislature. As a result, Verlin Kersey, who was then State Superintendent of Public Instruction, told me to move to Cal Poly and run it along with my other duties as Bureau Chief, which I did in July 1933. I was enthusiastic but stubborn and conservative, as I felt there was a great opportunity for Cal Poly. There are no funds available for my salary or for moving expenses, and I didn't object to the double duty. I carried on my the other state program, that is, a Bureau of Agricultural Chief until 1942, and then I became State Director of Vocation Education, and for some reason or other, they dumped some other jobs on me. I organized the state's Veterans Educational Program and was director of that program until it became Readjustment Education. And then I also was in charge of the surplus property of education in the state at that time. And I didn't drop my state program, my program with the State Department of Education directly, until we acquired our third campus at Kellogg's in 1949. As I look back, I got here in 1933, we had 125 students, 26 faculty and staff that you'd find in this room here. I could get them all in my office at one time, and a $75,000 a year budget. In 1938, the Voorhees family gave us the Voorhees campus down at San Dimas. We jumped from a junior college level in 1935 to a three-year level about that time, and then to a four-year level, and we began giving Bachelor of Science degrees in 1940, and by 1940 we had acquired 1,000 students. During the war, we had 2 Navy programs. We trained about 6,000 or 7,000 naval aviation cadets, and we had quite a program here in training people for the war effort. Right after the war, 1946, we jumped to 3,000 students, and most of the temporary buildings we had were put up very hurriedly to take care of that number. We acquired the Kellogg campus in 1949, and then since that time, we've launched this big building program. You might be interested in knowing we were accredited by the Northwest Association in 1947 and by the Western College Association in 1949. Today, we have close to 12,000 students in three campuses and a faculty and staff on our three campuses of 1,550. And our total support budget is $14 million, which is the third largest among the state colleges, with San Jose first and San Diego second. We're over these $100 million, we have more coming up. This last Board of Trustees meeting, they approved projects on this campus for $12 million. So we're still growing and growing rapidly. Right now, I feel we're in very good shape. We're getting full support of from the legislature, from the trustees, from the public, and I don't think any groups are seriously trying to hurt us at the present time. What I'm trying to say is that to bring Cal Poly to where we are today, it took a lot of blood and sweat and tears. It took a lot of hard work, around the clock, 7 days a week. It took us away from our families, days and weeks at a time, especially when we had to work with the legislature for appropriations to keep from having our place closed. It took thousands of dollars in personal funds, especially in those early days in the legislature, for extra travel and entertainment and other expenses that were never reimbursed. Couldn't be reimbursed. However, it has been worth it, and none of us will ever have any regrets if Cal Poly will continue to succeed. Now, what is this educational program to which we have been so dedicated? I have always believed that students should go to college to become educated, not just to get an education. We sometimes interpret the purpose of getting an education to mean just taking enough courses to obtain a certain number of units to get it to acquire a degree. I believe that the entire experience of attending college should be a means of becoming educated. These experiences should create in the student a desire to continue learning, an ability to evaluate and make decisions on important issues. These experiences should also produce wholesome attitudes, a respect for law and order and authority. They should develop proper social and behavioristic standards and an accumulation of knowledge and skills. Many people feel that the accumulation of knowledge in many subjects is a measurement of an educated man. Others feel that an educated man is one who knows one subject thoroughly. I feel that he must have both. He must specialize in one or two fields to give depth and application to his knowledge, and also to have enough general education to be able to make a satisfactory contribution to human welfare. Now, regardless of our basic educational philosophy, it is necessary to have a definite educational program. In preparing and evaluating the Cal Poly program in 1933, we had to use as a mandate the Enabling Act that was passed by the legislature setting up this school in 1901. We also had available the guidelines established by Leroy Anderson, the first president of California State Polytechnic School. The California State Polytechnic School had been put under the administration of the Bureau of Agricultural Education, as I stated, in 1931. So the program was naturally geared to the vocational education program of the state. This not only gave it a statewide status, but gave it recognition for a statewide contribution. We had to build incentives to attract students. Remember, it was hard to go to school in those days, and right in the middle of the Depression. This was done by making the work as practical as possible, utilizing laboratories and shops, agricultural areas to the utmost. Basically, we expressed the program as learning by doing and earning while learning. To attract students, we gave them their occupational contact in their first year. This was later called the upside-down approach to higher education. Since the faculty all worked very closely with the students, and the students had definite objectives and educational pursuits, and attitudes, that the attitude of the students was very wholesome. Up until 1931, the school had a reputation for poor discipline, bad discipline. To overcome this difficulty, we had strict rules and regulations and enforced them rigidly. As a matter of fact, before I came here, people thought it was a sort of a reform school, and they sent their parents. As a matter of fact, they almost made it a reform school until a committee of the legislature came down and saw the railroad trains go through here with all the all the cars, freight cars, and they thought they'd lose all their inmates overnight, so they abolished that idea. We had to watch costs. We had only $75,000 a year, and we were right in the middle of the Depression. Even when we were given racetrack funds in 1935, as I said, that was a very interesting procedure in acquiring them, and everybody else wanted them, we still were conservative and had to keep our costs down. We had to compete with junior colleges and other colleges in the state for students. So everybody connected with a college, not only the faculty, but also all staff members, worked hard for the overall welfare of the college. As we developed, we evolved what was known as our four major objectives for California State Polytechnic College, based on our methods of education as outlined above. You all know them, remember them as first, training for citizenship. We used every conceivable method to give the students incentive to learn respect for law and order and authority, development of proper social attitudes and behavior, as well as the accumulation of knowledge and skills. And that's what the students, freshmen, are doing today and all this week to try to get started in that direction. Our basic program was occupationally centered, and the job for which students were being prepared were identified year by year. We did everything possible to render service to engineering, agriculture, business, industry, and education by inviting them in for workshops and various meetings and things of that type to be of service here. We're even dedicating now our Voorhees campus for that purpose specifically. And we invited people from everywhere, from all over the world, to come and watch our methods and our philosophies so this program would spread. And of course, it is spreading maybe too rapidly at the present time when they want so many of our people overseas. And starting in 1957, committees of faculty and staff at the college worked on more specific objectives. You're all familiar with the result of that effort. We now have our total program outlined for the next 10 years and approved by the Board of Trustees as outlined in Emphasis for Tomorrow. Although we have grown, we have maintained practically all the objectives and philosophy that was evolved since 1933. We still have a spirit and an image to be proud of. However, size is beginning to make it difficult to continue with the same success that we've had up to date. Now, my hopes for the future of Cal Poly are simple. I hope that Cal Poly keeps and further develops the image and identity that so many of us have worked so hard to develop. This can be done only by a lot of thought, close cooperation, an action on the part of the entire Cal Poly staff, including the faculty, students, non-academic staff, and the administration, working closely together on our objectives and our high standards. I believe lots of improvement can be made in keeping up to date on the needs for our occupational type program. This can be brought about by continuous studies, such as the agricultural study now underway by the Stanford Research Institute, for which most of you are familiar. We set aside some money and have the money available for a study of senior projects and other studies we should make to be sure we're up to date on our occupational objectives and our total program of education. At the same time, the faculty must keep up to date in their respective areas to implement these studies in the instructional program. I hope Cal Poly can preserve the wonderful spirit and the student attitudes and our close student-faculty relationship. And you'd be thrilled to see the letters I get from graduates and former students of the successes they've had and attribute their success to the work that they've done with you people as individuals and as a group. I get them every week. And to talk to their parents and to the legislators and everyone, the youngsters are so happy and so pleased with what they get here. The attitude is just outstanding. Naturally, there are some weaknesses that need correction. You should be watching these weaknesses constantly in such areas as duplication of effort, proliferation of courses, overstaffing and understaffing in areas that are vital to the college, and only continual study can accomplish this purpose. We have suffered from growing pains in the last few years. I hope that the college does not get too ambitious and grow too rapidly and thereby sacrifice many of the goals and objectives we strive to maintain over these years. Now, everyone should have a part in striving for the very best leadership to keep Cal Poly's goals. That means, among other things, the nomination of a new president, who, first of all, and most important of all, must believe and thoroughly in Cal Poly and the Cal Poly philosophy. He must be a strong and dynamic leader who is able to get the respect of the faculty and the students and is not too reluctant to make important decisions. Not only must he have respect and confidence within the college, but he also must have the direct have respect for those who direct the destinies of the college from outside, and I mean the trustees and the legislature and the public. Cal Poly has done a fairly good job with its constituency, but it still can do a better job. We have not let enough people know all the good things about Cal Poly, and the way must be found to get this more information spread to the public schools throughout the state and to the general public about the program. Now, with my hopes, I have some concerns. And I've mentioned before, my first concern has to do with size. At one time, we thought that we would have an ideal college here with just 400 students, and we started to build with that in mind. Our sites then were increased to 1,000, and we reached that by World War II. Soon after World War II, we settled on a size of 4,000, and then pledged that we would never go beyond this number until we ran into trouble in getting more buildings. We were down the bottom of the priority list. This was done, we thought, in order to keep Cal Poly spirit, and we felt that that's at this size we could work most effectively with our type of educational program. We were then forced to remove this limit, as I told you, and we are now in a limit now on this campus, which has been established at 12,000 students, and for this campus, and 10,000 for our Kellogg campus. Now, some of the trustees and some of the people in the chancellor's office are talking about 20,000 for our Kellogg campus. I feel it's going to be most difficult to keep the high spirit and enthusiasm of the faculty and staff as we have over the years if the enrollment is too large. It is especially going to be difficult to keep a close student-teacher relationship that exists today. I hope good, strong departments can be maintained to accomplish this close student-teacher relationship. And even if these departments get too large, I think we should split them. Of course, we've got to consider the cost that that is done. With our occupationally-centered program, it is important that Cal Poly keep up to date in its instructional program. We all realize how rapidly agriculture, industry, engineering, and business are changing and becoming more complex. Cal Poly must do everything possible to keep abreast of these changes. Manpower needs must be studied in all areas for the next 10 to 15 years. And every faculty member and administrator, in order to keep up to date in his respective area, must take advantage of sabbatical leaves, summer sessions, working with engineering, agriculture, industry, and business whenever feasible. Bringing representatives from those groups, occupational groups, onto the campus whenever you can. And every way we can do that is important if we're going to keep our teaching and everything up to date, to keep our reputation, to keep this program outstanding. Now, of course, you must consider costs. Besides the recruitment for the right type of students, there's competition involved in the cost of operating a college. Cal Poly today is the third largest largest operating cost of any of the state colleges. We've tried to maintain a cost per student that is close to the average from among all the state colleges, just so people wouldn't pick us out as having an expensive type of program. But this isn't being maintained. In this current budget, 65-66 and 66-67, we're losing ground in this area. Our costs per student are going up, and they're way more than the average. This has to be watched. It is recognized that the occupational type program, with its applications through laboratory work, field work, equipment, upkeep, agricultural production areas, is more expensive than any other types of programs. Everyone will admit knows that. You have smaller classes, you have more equipment to keep up, and so forth. It must be kept in mind that in order to justify any higher costs, the college must deliver a superior type of education and convince the public and the legislature that it is superior and worth the extra cost. You've got to watch that. It's competitive. And this is hard to do. If Cal Poly is not successful, it is liable to be hurt in this area. And everyone concerned should give this problem a lot of attention. I've always felt that we had a close faculty-administration relationship. We've had some problems, but as far as I know, none of them have been too serious. We have had consultative processes that start with the departments and then to the divisions and finally to the top administration level in all areas and curriculum and budgets, personnel, and all those others. With the faculty and staff councils or the Senate, as they have at the Kellogg campus, better ways must be found in getting a closer relationship between the administration and these representative groups. We cannot work an educational institution without cooperation, understanding, and good communications. A greater effort must be made both on the part of the administration and faculty to achieve this objective. I suggest the following: that a better definition and understanding and the necessary consultative process that make up the best interests of the total program of Cal Poly be outlined. They're rather vague, nebulous at the present time. No one knows which, and both of them can't do the same thing in duplicate effort. You've got to find where they come together. That some method must be worked out by which the chief administrative officers work more closely, not only with the Senate and its councils, but also with the department heads and division heads and the non-academic groups. Now, basically, we've had an excellent unwritten code of ethics here at Cal Poly. We've had, except for in a few cases, excellent relationships between the administration and individual faculty members. However, there have been cases that have caused some confusion. This is an area where frank and honest discussion should take place in order to avoid misunderstanding. I think it is important that some areas be more clearly defined and agreed upon. Now, the chancellor's office is not defined or given direction on some of our personnel responsibilities, and they must be taken care of at the local level. And sometimes we're confused as to what our responsibilities are and what decisions and who's to make decisions and how they're to be made, and that's what brings up a lot of misunderstanding. There's one very serious one that took place on the other campus this past year, and they must be worked out. Now, I believe student attitudes are dependent upon the interest and example of the faculty. As I have said many times, I'm very proud of the attitude and conduct of our students. We have never had any serious problems during my 33 years at Cal Poly. On some college campuses, and perhaps a little at Cal Poly, there have been trends among a few students for unreasonable independence and freedom that could or have resulted in disorder and unethical conduct or even viciousness. This is expressed sometimes in four-letter words, misquoted statements, biased or slanted articles in student newspapers, disorderly demonstrations, and so forth. Now, there's no serious objection to independence and freedom as long as no one gets hurt or as long as the educational functions of the college are not disrupted. Now, many of you people have observed and read articles that there's been developing a theory by some parents, some schools, and even some courtrooms which condones rebellious conduct of young people against authority, law and order, or any regulatory measures that restricts their whims and wishes, desires, and activities. As a result, there have been an increase in crime and many riots and other serious disturbances among our young people. I believe that instead of condoning rebellious conduct, we should spend more time in teaching the meaning of discipline, restraint, self-respect, respect for law and order, and the rights of others. This is the basis for good citizenship. Without good citizenship, our nation will deteriorate. And I think one of the most important functions of a tax-supported college should be the training for good citizenship. And I think Cal Poly can do a lot of work in that direction. Now, my last statement has to do with organization and some of my basic and immediate concerns. Now, both the Voorhees and Kellogg campuses were gifts to the California State Polytechnic College at San Luis Obispo. The deeds transferring the property stated that they must be an integral part of Cal Poly and carry out the same objectives and philosophies. it has been necessary to operate the three campuses as one college. It would take an act of the legislature to separate the Kellogg campus from the San Luis Obispo campus. Even then, the Kellogg campus must continue with the same program as carried out at San Luis Obispo until 1975, when the status will be reevaluated by both the state and the Kellogg Foundation. Now, the Voorhees deed isn't as stringent, except that it's given to Cal Poly for educational purposes. Now, it has been necessary to keep the San Luis Obispo and Kellogg campus as one college in order to be sure that the Kellogg campus would develop the Cal Poly program. When the campuses were small, even though there were many problems, it was not so difficult. As we grow, the problems have become very complex. We have tried several administrative structures during the last few years, but they haven't been very successful. It has been too hard to provide the necessary administrative leadership with campuses that are 235 miles apart. It's been hard to convince people that I spend anywhere from 60 to 70 days each year on the Kellogg campus. And with that, there've been too few staff contacts, because most of my time there has been spent with foundation meetings, cabinet meetings, Arabian Advisory Board meetings, special functions and affairs set up by the students and faculty, and meetings and so forth. Even this week, I have about five of them down there when I leave right from here to go to the other campus. They don't believe me I spend so much time down there, but I do. Now, at the same time, I have the same problem here. When I'm away from here, I don't meet the staff here and contact the people here. And yet, I'm here just a little bit more than I am down the other place. And then the last 4 years, the chancellors and the trustees have certainly loaded a lot of assignments. I'm chairman of four statewide committees for the presidents and for the trustees. And I'm a member of about seven. And I spend more time away with them than I do on either of the campuses. So I have a problem. Maybe that's something someone could consider for the future. Now, a year ago, I proposed to the chancellor the need for a vice president on each campus in order to develop more local leadership. You have a